And there we go. Okay, let's try this now.
Good evening, friends of the Bulkley Valley and beyond. My name is Thomas Tom Roper, and you are listening to CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. My program, On the Ropes, is broadcasting from the Cassia territory of the Gidimdum clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en.
Well, there we go. Kevin?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, that's good. So we've got ourselves plugged in, and we'll see how things are going on. It looks like our volume's a little bit high, or maybe I'm a little bit too aggressive on the volume. So we had quite a week last week with, it seemed like Trump wanted us to become the 51st state. It was hard to believe that that would happen. So I was very happy that we were able to overcome that by winning the hockey game. For the moment, anyways. So, ladies and gentlemen, and my listeners from the Bulkley Valley, we're tuning in from right out by Rose Lake, where the Bulkley starts, right at Bulkley Lake, and all the way to Hazleton, where the Bulkley flows into the Skeena. We're trying to find people that we can interview and talk about their life in the Bulkley Valley. And tonight, we have a friend from Telqua, British Columbia, Kevin Whedon. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, drag that over to you if you want. Yeah, there. That sounds good. All right, Kevin. So in this setup, we always try to figure out why a person came to the Valley and what they're doing and how they like the Valley. And in your case, you were born here.
Yes, I was born in Smithers Hospital here.
Okay, right on. And that so that was back a few years.
That was 70 years ago.
Well, there you go. So that hospital's been around for a while. Same hospital.
I think they've changed the building, but it's in the same location.
Yeah, okay, right on. Right. So, Kevin, what I wanted to sort of start with a little bit is I read a little blurb on the back of a pamphlet at the Seniors Center talking about your grandfather. And I was wondering if you could sort of open that up a little bit for us so we know where it is that you got started in the Valley.
So my grandfather was named Emil Whedon.
Oh, okay.
His name was actually Eric Emil, and my middle name is Eric. He came to North America around 1910, and then around 1913 he came up to the northwestern B.C., and he and two other Swedes were traveling on foot to the Burns Lake area to try to get on with the Grand Trunk Pacific, which was being built at the time.
Okay.
And my dad said that the person he was, one of the two men he was traveling with, played out south of Houston. And so they stopped, and all three of them preempted land there.
Okay. All right. So would that be in the Utsa Lake area or more
no,
the Buck Flats area?
Buck Flats is the way it's accessed now.
Right, right.
And the place where Dad was born is now called Rose Ranch.
Okay.
I think Rose is the name of the people or the family that lives there now.
Okay. All right. Have you been out to that site and seen it?
I've driven past. Right. I don't know anything more about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that sounds good. So you're saying when your grandfather was coming to the Northwest, so did they take the steamboat to get to Hazleton, or did they come up from the south?
I think they probably took the steamboat to Hazleton from Port Essington.
Right.
Probably, but I don't know that for sure.
Right. So. Okay, well, that seems to be part of the direction, because at the time there was no... there was no road to the Smithers Burns Lake area.
Yeah.
So they just had to walk whatever they were going to do.
Yep.
And so your grandfather, did he have a plan? Like, was he a farmer back in Sweden, or did you know anything about that?
I don't really know that. He was born in a place up at the top of the Baltic Sea, a place called Haparanda.
Okay.
Which is right on the Finnish border, he said.
Okay.
My father said.
Right, right. You met your grandfather, did you, Kevin?
Yes, I knew him. He died when I was about 10 years old.
Okay. So. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, right on. And so his settlement, then, when he settled, like you said, preempted land in that Burns Lake area, is that where your father was born?
Yes, he was born on Rose Ranch near the Trout Lakes, what we call the Trout Lakes. I'm not sure that's their official name now.
Right, right. Okay. And so your father came from a big family?
There were, I think, 6 children in the family.
Okay, right. And so then in his upbringing, he was back in the bush, and he was your grandfather would have been then attempting to farm or at least have animals around to feed the family.
I'm guessing so. Certainly they grew potatoes.
Right.
Dad told a story of one time when his father was away hunting or trapping or something.
Right.
In the fall, and it got very cold. And he was out there digging potatoes with his mother, Ellen Whedon.
Right.
Was her married name. And the potatoes were actually freezing as they were dug. But fortunately, his dad came home and stopped them from digging the potatoes anymore.
Right, right. Otherwise, we'd have lost them all.
Probably,
yeah,
yes.
Which we need to have. So they seemed to be okay in the ground, but as soon as they come out of the ground, they were in trouble.
That was my impression, cool. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right, right on. So then your father, if he was living with his family and your grandfather was kind of, I mean, the area has always been sort of logging, trapping, mining, that type, farming. So he would have had learned some of those skills and then passed them on to his family. Would you say?
Yes, I would certainly say that. What my father talked mostly about his father was as a hunter. He was a very good shot with a gun.
I see.
And a very good hunter.
I see. And when your father was of age, then it was time for him to get married himself and find a place where he wanted to be. And so it wasn't that he had decided, well, I'm going to go back to Sweden and I'm going to live there. He was pretty happy in the valley, would you say?
It's my impression he had no intention of going back to Sweden, but I don't really know.
Yeah, yeah. And so then your father then, he sort of took over the farm?
Not at all. He bought a separate farm.
Okay.
When my father was 4 years old, he said, they moved from the Trout Lakes area to Woodmere so that the older boys could go to school Woodmere school.
Right. Okay. And that school, the Woodmere school, is sort of, was it kind of like the local school? Wasn't there a school out there also by the... just out of Telqua? What was that one called?
I don't know that for sure. There was a Round Lake school for some time as well.
Right, right. So then when you're talking all the boys, this is the family that you were in, and these are your siblings.
No, they were his siblings that they moved to Woodmere for.
Okay.
Woodmere Road so that the older boys could go to school at that time.
Oh, I see. So you're talking your grandfather moved to Woodmere Road area.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Okay, I get that. All right. So in that area now, when we're talking about that Woodmere Road area, there is a road up there called Whedon Road.
Yes.
Would that be sort of the area where the grandfather ended up?
Perhaps way up at the end of it, but it's a dead-end road.
Mm-hmm.
And no, there were no Whedons that lived there when it was named Whedon Road.
Oh, I see.
And I don't think that was the way they accessed their property that they lived on.
Right. They would have come off of Woodmere Road somehow.
Possibly off Boundary Road. I don't know.
Right. Okay. I see. Well, I actually lived up in that area myself for about 15 years, but I was on Hislop Road.
Oh, yeah.
Which is across the, over the hill.
Across the hills, yes.
Yeah, that's right. But there is a connection between that area of getting around. Well, Kevin, as we're plugging along here, it's an opportunity we try to mix in your playlist songs. So we've got something together here, and you've chosen a couple of songs, and I've just put them together the way you threw them at me. And the first one is Suzanne by Leonard Cohen. Is there anything, excuse me, about that song that, why you chose it? Is it an old girlfriend or anything along that line?
No, there were no old girlfriends named Suzanne.
Yeah.
So the story of these songs, all four of these songs, come from a CD that I produced about 10 years ago called Kevin Whedon's Top 20.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I've been part of a men's support group for many years. And this was a project that was suggested by one of the members, is that we each come up with a top 20 list of songs.
Well, that sounds like fun.
This was the first song that came up when I started thinking of a top 20. This song was the first one. So.
All right. Well, let's give it a go here. We'll turn it on and see how it sounds.
Yes, that's it.
Suzanne takes you down to her place near the river. You can hear the boats go by, you can spend the night beside her, and you know that she's half crazy, but that's why you wanna be there. And she feeds you tea and oranges that come all the way from China, and just when you mean to tell her that you have no love to give her, then she gets you on her wavelength, and she lets the river answer that you've always been her lover. And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you know that she will trust you, for you've touched her perfect body with your mind. And Jesus was a sailor when he walked upon the water, and he spent a long time watching from his lonely wooden tower. And when he knew for certain only drowning men could see him, he said, all men will be sailors then until the sea shall free them. But he himself was broken long before the sky would open, forsaken, almost human, he sank beneath your wisdom like a stone. And you want to travel with him, and you want to travel blind, and you think maybe you'll trust him, for he's touched your perfect body with his mind. Suzanne takes your hand and she leads you to the river. She is wearing rags and feathers from Salvation Army counters, and the sun pours down like honey on Our Lady of the Harbor. And she shows you where to look among the garbage and the flowers. There are heroes in the seaweed, there are children in the morning, they are leaning out for love, and they will lean that way forever while Suzanne holds the mirror. And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you know you can trust her, for she's touched your perfect body with her mind.
That was a beautiful song, Kevin.
I still love that song.
Yeah, it's something you could listen to your whole life and never get enough of it. And Leonard Cohen was a very famous Canadian artist who's got some fabulous work. He's passed away in the last couple of years.
Yes.
Did you know much about him personally or anything?
No, not really, no.
Never seen him play or anything like that?
No.
Okay. So, Kevin, when you were talking about this men's group that you have, are you still part of a men's group right now?
Yes, I am, yep.
And that is, because I was under the impression that it just restarted, the men's shed, or is that a different?
So that's a completely different thing.
Okay, all right, so we're on two different things there. Okay, so just getting back to your family and your grandfather and setting up in the Woodmere area, and then your father then and his siblings were all together in that, what we would call Telqua. And then they all decided, they all went to school, got out of school, and moved on to their worlds. Did they all stay in the area?
They did for a lot of the time. The older brother, Bill Whedon, mm-hmm. was a logging contractor for many years. And both my father, Eric, and his brother, their brother, Alfred Bobo Whedon, worked for Bill for many years.
Right, right. I actually ran into Bobo and at towards the end of his life in Telqua. He had a little house in Telqua, and I had a
it's
house.
It's true,
there.
Yes.
Yeah. And he was working for Pete Aslin, I think, at that time as the mechanic back in that time, eh? So there was a fair amount of Whedons around, and then when your dad then came of age, what was his plan?
So my dad said that he quit school when he was 16.
Okay.
He said he was smarter than the teacher, so he quit.
Right, right. That's a good reason.
And he also told many times about going to the Prince Rupert shipyards while the Second World War was on, and he worked there for at least two summers.
Okay, right. That would have been very interesting
and
at that time.
He came back with enough money to buy a farm on Woodmere Road. And that farm was lot 1218 at the top of Woodmere Road. And that's where his children grew up. That's
okay.
Where I grew up.
So. Right. So when you're saying the top of Woodmere, are we talking the top end by Boundary Road or are we talking by the highway?
A little farther on beyond Boundary Road.
Okay. Right. Right on. So it's not 15 minutes from town. It looks like to get to town is more like about 25 minutes. So you're out in the bush. To a certain extent, and your family, your siblings and everything grew up on that farm.
That is correct, yep.
And so did that farm life, everybody had, chores that they had to do, and they were all part of the farming existence, like you must have had animals and had to cut hay and that type of affair?
Well, certainly that's true. We had cows and we had to put up hay.
Right.
And all of the children, especially the teenagers, were required to help.
Right.
Indeed.
Right. And so in that situation, when I think back to my father-in-law, he was up on a farm in Ontario. And when he was of age, his whole plan was to get out of the farm because he didn't like that type of work. Now, out of your group of siblings, did anybody take over that farm, Kevin?
No, the farm has been sold, and mm-hmm. it's not in the family anymore.
Right.
Certainly when I was a kid, a teenager perhaps, my father told me specifically, do not become a farmer.
Right, right.
And that was one of the few pieces of advice I took, I guess.
Right.
I did not become a farmer.
Right, right, exactly. How many siblings did you have at that?
I have six sisters and two brothers, so there are nine of us.
Nine altogether.
Yep. Oh.
And I knew a couple of your brothers. Like I worked with Rob at Canfor, and I've run into Ted before at the museum, and then I actually worked for Madigan Equipment. Fred Maynard was married to Lindy at the time.
Indeed, yep.
Yeah. So I know a little bit of the family, and so has the family stayed in the area? Like of this nine Whedons, most of them are in the Bulkley Valley area.
Well, there's about six of the nine of us are here.
Okay.
And three of us live off in different cities.
Right, right. Okay. So it's still got a pretty good family connection, you would say.
Well, I would say that,
yes. Yeah, for sure. And now everybody's had children or starting to have children, or there's children on the way, and then so those children are part of the Bulkley Valley mosaic also.
Well, I would say so, yes.
Yeah. So you actually have a pretty big footprint, the Whedon footprint.
I suppose.
Yeah, right. So, Kevin, getting back to yourself now, a little bit more on your decision, like when you, that was something that your father had said to you, don't become a farmer. I think that's kind of interesting advice. And so what did you set yourself at?
So I was the first in our family to head off for college. I went to college in Prince George.
Okay.
And it was my intention to become a teacher, although that fell through and I never did become a teacher.
Right, and right. So did you follow through on that particular degree or whatever that was to get the certificate? Was it just a general arts program that you were able to take?
Well, I was planning to be an English teacher, so I do have a degree in English.
Okay.
But yeah. I never got a certificate to teach.
Right. I see that. Okay. All right. And so the decision to go into English, how did that sort of get developed? Was your mom a great reader? Were you guys at the farm like interested in literature?
No, I was more inspired by an English teacher in high school.
Okay. Okay.
On the farm, we did read, and there were always books around.
Right.
But no, that was not where I got the direction from.
Right, right. And so at the time, I would think you wouldn't have had a TV out on the farm?
We got a TV when I was around 10 or 12, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, we, for some time when I was a small kid, we had no power and no telephone.
Oh, I see. All right. So did you have a generator, some type of a generator that you could have power at any at certain times?
Not at all, no.
Okay, all right.
No, we used coal oil and Coleman lanterns.
Right, right. Well, that's interesting because that was the lifestyle that I wanted when I came up here.
It's not great.
No, but it was something that some people aspire to that, you know, when they're wanting to live up north, as we call it, even though we're sort of only halfway up the province, but anyways, that's kind of interesting. So if we keep going along that direction, Kevin, now when you got your degree, did you come back? You weren't going to be able to teach with it. What did you go in that end to find ways to keep the wolf from the door?
So I needed a job, certainly, and I chose the Forest Service at that time, the BC Forest Service.
Okay.
And worked on and off there for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually decided to go back to university. I'm a very slow learner. I went to university twice.
Right, right.
And the second time I took computers.
Oh, I see. Okay. And when would that have been? Was that sort of at the beginning of the computer revolution?
It was, I would say. I returned with my computer science degree at the beginning of 1990.
1990, okay.
And I've been here since.
And is that some degree that's helped you with your make an income for you?
Indeed, it did. It was my living for quite a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
These days, I'm a pensioner. I've been retired for 4.5 years now.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds real good. Well, let's slip in another song while we're going along here. We'll mix in our second song here. We've got another one lined up. And see if we can open that up there. Where did that come up there for? There we take that over there. Okay. So we'll give this. This is number two. Now, this song, would this be part of this men's group playlist?
Well,
also?
Yes, all of these songs came from that CD that I produced at
right.
that time.
Okay.
This is Black Magic Woman, and it's the reason it's emotionally important to me. We were going to the Devil's Web nightclub one time when it was on Broadway Avenue.
Right, right. I remember that.
And Frank Soda was playing inside, and we heard this song. It's Black Magic Woman, and this is by
Santana. Yeah.
But he was playing this song, and that's why the song is so emotionally attached to me.
Right, right. Okay, well, let's give it a try here. That is a beautiful song. I don't know, did you ever go to any concerts or anything when you were growing up, Kev?
I've certainly never seen Santana.
Right, right.
Except in the movie Woodstock.
Right, yeah, that was a pretty fierce movie also. When you were going back to the, your mentioning of the Devil's Web, I remember that that particular bar. Back in the, it was in the building that Apollo was in there for a while on the corner.
That was later, yes.
Yeah, yeah, right. And so you were talking about Frank Soda. Who was he a musician that you knew?
My sister was good friends with Frank Soda.
Okay.
My sister's husband comes from Kitimat, and so did Frank Soda.
Okay.
And I think that was the connection.
Right, right. There is always a little bit of music in Kitimat. They've got a few country singers that have been quite famous too over the years. So, Kevin, on your own journey, like when you left home, left the farm, where did you decide you were going to set up shop as such?
So, I don't know that I ever made such a conscious decision.
Right.
When I left high school, I had a scholarship, a small scholarship, so I went to school that first year after high school, and that meant moving to Prince George.
I see.
So I spent a year there, and then I moved back here for employment for the summer.
Right, right. And what did you think of Prince George?
Well, I think the next song is going to be Ragu.
The next song is Stan Rogers.
Oh, okay.
But we could
so
play
coming
Ragu.
Up, well, coming up, we have a song by Ragu Loganathan. And he has said that his song that he wrote, called Caledonia, is his love song for the city of Prince George.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, in the song, he mentions that she smells like she hasn't bathed in quite a long time.
Right.
And I certainly remember the smell of Prince George.
They call that the smell of money.
I suppose. It smelled pretty bad.
Yeah, it definitely. You'd have to get used to it, and it was hard to get used to before it would cut out your smell system. Yeah.
I lived in Prince George for about 3 years total.
Right.
And never did get used to that smell. Never learned to like it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was the first place that I came from Burnaby when I moved up. I got a job out at Anzac, which was up towards Mackenzie, and we lived in Prince George. And we were living in, there was a camp up there, the Paul Lumber. Do you remember that company?
No.
Anyways, they had a little mill up there, and that's where I was working. And I kind of always have liked Prince George because it's got a lot going on there. And I mean, I love where we live and what we're doing here in Smithers, but that was kind of like, we used to call it when we would go to Prince George, we were going to Mecca because we were going to go and spend a bit of money and pick up all the things that we couldn't find in town, you know. But anyways, so when you got back from Prince George, did you, is that at the time when you had to decide you were going to either buy some property or build a house or rent or whatever you were going to do?
So no, I was not willing to buy property at that time. Mm-hmm. I was still considered myself a very young man. And too young to marry a piece of property, I thought.
Right, right.
So, no, I just got a job and went traveling after a year or two. The second year after high school, I went traveling rather than...
Settling down.
Well, rather than going back to school.
Right, right. And so when you traveled, where did you get to, Kev?
Well, that first time I went traveling, I went to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And had a year rail pass and went from city to city. I wouldn't do it that way now.
No, no, that's right. But it's a good way to get started and broke in, you know, because you're kind of unsure of yourself and what's going on over there, different country. So it's a. I did the same thing, Kevin. I had a chance to get over to Europe, and then for some reason I had a big desire to go to India, and so I was going to try to hitchhike my way across Asia and get over there. And at the time, Pakistan and India were fighting quite badly, so I thought I would go through Africa. It would be a lot easier. So I went through the Sahara Desert, and by the time I got out in Senegal, I had hepatitis and I was completely beat up. And I never did make it to India. So did you have any goal that you wanted to see specifically?
I don't recall any such thing at that time. I was focused on becoming a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that fell through in 1978, 6 years after I graduated from high school, I was at loose ends for some time.
Right, right. Okay. So then when you came back now, then you must have made this decision of computer science training. Was that at UBC?
No, I got my teacher's training and finished my degree at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby.
Okay.
And I went back there for computing as well.
Right. And so once you had your other degree, was the computer science degree shortened? Like you would get sort of 2 years credit into that, or was it another full 4 years?
It took me about 3 years to complete that second degree. As you suggest, yes, I had credit for a previous degree, so I didn't have to do all the undergraduate or all the first 2 year courses.
Right, so. Right. I see. Okay, so that didn't turn out too bad. So you were renting down, and were you at the renting at the university?
No, I was living off campus.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what did you think of Burnaby?
Oh, I hated it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a city.
Yeah, it's different. It's a different lifestyle. We are, now we can call Smithers a small city, but not really. We're more of a town. And our lifestyle is quite a bit different than the big cities down south, for sure. So when you got home then, now you got to get this training has got to get to work. So did you open up a store, or did you work out of your house, or how did you run that?
No, I got a contract with the government for the BC Ministry of Environment.
Okay.
And for two or so years, I was their IT person. So I would set up computers and help anybody who needed help with their computers.
That sounds like a pretty good program, right? And so that was interesting, and you met a lot of people, and you were kind of had a pretty good job. You were getting a sort of a steady paycheck. How did that go? That was a pretty good thing to have. Did you feel good about that?
Well, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I eventually got booted out of the job, so I had a personality conflict with the big boss of the office, and I guess he won.
So. Right, right. Well, there's always a hierarchy. When we're at the bottom, usually we don't win. But that's interesting, Kevin. And so I'm trying to get to the point where you actually decided you were going to buy some land. Now, did that come after your completion of the job with the government, with the environment?
So by then we had bought, I was living with a woman at the time,
mm-hmm.
and we bought a piece of land just outside of Smithers, a 5-acre block, and that's where I lived during those 2 years with the Ministry of Environment.
Oh, I see. So you were considered no longer a Telquaite, you were a Smithereen?
I guess I was at that time, yes.
Yeah, right. And so where are you today?
Oh, I'm a Telqueen.
Okay, you're back.
And yes, I live in Telqua.
Oh, you live right in town?
Yes.
So you did have a property up on Hislop at some time?
I did, up on Hislop Road, and I built a small house there. And I lived in it for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And now you live in downtown Telqua somewhat?
Yeah, suburban Telqua.
Suburban Telqua, yeah, that sounds perfect. Okay, well, let's move forward here, Kev. We are actually at the point where we call this the midway point of the show. And so then I've got to sort of give my station identification of what's happening with our show. Let's see if I can find that here. Oh, right, and I'm required to put out our call sign. We're CICK. And you can find us 93.9 on your FM dial. And my name is Thomas Tom Roper, and you are listening to Smithers Community Radio. And so I just want everyone to be aware of that. And we also take this moment to thank our sponsors. We've got a list of sponsors that are helping us out. The CICK is a volunteer-run organization, and we're always looking for a little bit of financial help when we can find it. So I would like to put a shout-out to Accounting on Broadway, BV Concert Association. We've got Classic Sanitary, Ranch House Tattoo, and I've got Phoenix Self-Care Studio. So I want the listeners to be aware that tonight we are interviewing Kevin Whedon. I'm calling him the Telqua Pioneer, and I was happy to see that he has returned to Telqua. I thought he was going to get stuck in Smithers for a while. So welcome back, Kevin. And we'll move on to sort of the second side of our show here. And you were talking about this guy, Ragu. Let's pull him up now and see if we can get a song from him. Did you meet him in Prince George?
No, I did not know him when I lived in Prince George. I think he probably moved there much after I was there.
Mm-hmm.
The way I met him was he showed up one year at the Midsummer Festival for Smithers, and he sat around the campfire all weekend and played song after song after song.
Wow.
And
so he had quite a repertoire.
He certainly did, yes.
Yeah, and Mike?
This song is one that he wrote himself. As I say, it's called Caledonia, which was a name for British Columbia back in the old days, before it became British Columbia.
Right, right. And so he was definitely relating it to where he was living in Prince George at the time.
Yes.
Let's take a run at it and see how it sounds.
As I came walking down Burden Street, heavy-hearted and dragging my feet, well, a funny kind of woman there I chanced to meet, named Caledonia. Well, I smiled at her and I said, "How do you do?" And she threw me against a tree and said, "What's it to you?" I said, "I come in peace," and then she loved me black and blue, Caledonia. She's not pretty, but she sure has style. Once every month or so she'll give you a smile. She smells like she hasn't bathed in a long, long while, Caledonia. Well, she was found as a baby on a pile of 2x10s, and they kept her in the coop with all the broody hens, and threw her in a moose steak every now and then, Caledonia. And when the farmer died, she was sent to the town, where she beat up all the boys and burnt the group home down, set loose all the dogs and the cats in the pound, Caledonia. And then she took to walk in the loneliest trade, bought secondhand books with all the money she made, lived on Emma Goldman smokes and artificial lemonade, Caledonia. Friends all say, "Why do you stay with such a bitch? She'll leave you for dead in a muddy highway ditch, or sell you for parts for half an hour of stinking rich, Caledonia." And I say, "No, you're wrong, she's not nice, but she's real. She's got love to give, she's got secrets to reveal to the one who in her mess sees the power to heal. Heal me, Caledonia. She does not pretend, and she has never lied about the jaunt she's done or the drugs she's tried. She's not ashamed of her place in the social divide, not her, Caledonia." Well, there's pretty girls in the islands, I hear, with sweet-smelling skin and lacy black underwear. But me, I'm in love with a 40-ounce stare named Caledonia. And I asked her once about death do us part. She said, "I make no such promises, but I'll show you my heart. Here it is, wild and sad, like some great work of art, Caledonia, Caledonia, Caledonia."
That's a cool song, Kev. It really is. There's some good words in there, and it's very nice layup, very comfortable to listen to. This Ragu is—he was around Prince George for a while. He also went up, to Nova Scotia. He was for a little while in Blue River. He's been around a bit. Checked it, and maybe he's been following some of the music scene. So when you're talking about the music scene, Kevin, how did you get started in that? Like, did you start out as a youngster with a guitar?
No, I got my first guitar when I was 16, and I did not start playing music until then.
Right, right. So it wasn't sort of a big part of your life. Did you listen to music as a young fellow?
Well, there was always a radio playing when I was a kid. And I guess I listened to that music. None of my, or at least only one older brother, was a musician later in his life. And so there was no live music at home. And nobody taught me anything about music.
Right. Right. So did you learn on your own? Did you, is that something that you took your own training? Somebody taught you how to play the guitar, or did you just pick it up?
No, I didn't pick it up by myself. I took lessons for some time. When I first bought the guitar at the age of 16.
Right, right.
But after a year or so, I quit that.
Yeah.
And after that, it was mainly just my own attempts.
Right, right. And how did you get in the direction of the Midsummer Festival? You were talking to you. I've seen you there for many years. That's now been going for over 40 years. Were you in the beginning of that, Kevin?
Yes, I was involved in the beginning. I joined around 1980. I joined the Styx River Coffee House here in Smithers,
okay,
which was run by George and Norma Stokes. And it was from that organization, the coffee house, that we started the festival.
Oh, I see. I see. And then that decision was to have this summer festival and bring in acts from around the country.
More or less. The festival was kind of the child of Mary and Rose and myself. I had just returned from Australia, where I had traveled for a year, and I had been to several festivals during that trip. And when I came back, I thought there should be a festival here, and Mary and Rose had moved here at the time.
I see.
And she agreed that there should be a festival, and so we decided to try to start one. And as you say, we managed, and it's over 40 years old now. So.
Yes, it's actually pretty incredible, the amount of work that that took to get rolling and then to keep it rolling. It's pretty amazing. There's a lot of dedicated people in that festival society, and it's pretty cool. So I wasn't aware you went to Australia. I kind of would like to go there myself. And did you manage to find work while you were over there, Kevin, or was it just a tour?
Yes, at that time the Australian government was allowing Commonwealth citizens to under the age of 30 to have a 9-month work visa.
Oh, that's.
And so I took advantage of that program, and I worked for maybe 6 months in Australia.
Right, right. And what did you do over there?
Oh, nothing very interesting.
Yeah.
I was I held a stick for a surveyor for a time.
Right,
for
right.
A couple of months before I moved on. And
did you get out to one of those sheep ranches out in the outback? Did you see any of that outback?
Not really. I did drive through the outback. I went to Darwin and I worked for a couple of months there in a plant nursery.
Okay. Okay.
And then I moved on and drove down through the center of Australia to Ayers Rock and Alice Springs.
Right, right. And so that's pretty cool that you were able to see that. Did that give you any, did you get any inspiration out of that Ayers Rock area? It's kind of amazing country, eh?
Well, it's certainly amazing country, yes.
Did you get a chance to meet any Aboriginal people?
I did not really meet any of them, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a very, when you travel, do you find it like an eye-opening experience or just kind of like, this is pretty cool, but I still want to get back to Telqua?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have any words of wisdom about that, I don't think.
Right, no problem. Well, whenever I've traveled, I've had a lot of opportunities. I've always returned to the valley and always felt very happy that I'm back, and because I really feel connected to the valley, and I feel that that's, you know, you have no choice but being connected. You were born here, so you're tied in whether you like it or not. So it's great to see other places, and but I do feel that I've always said Telqua is the center of my universe, you know, and that's how I kind of have always felt about it. But anyways. Well, we've got room for another song here. Now, we just slipped to, we try to have a Canadian song on when we play
so
and make up our playlist.
Ragu certainly fits that category.
Exactly. And we've also got Leonard Cohen that you have, and your last choice here is Stan Rogers, and another great Canadian out of Hamilton. People were surprised that he's from Hamilton because a lot of his songs are more.
Yes, I was very disappointed to find out he was from Ontario. I thought that he must have been born on the East Coast.
Definitely, definitely.
From listening to his early songs.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this one is called Make and Break Harbor.
How still lies the bay in the light western airs which blow from the crimson horizon. Once more we tack home with a dry empty hold, saving gas with the breezes so fair. She's a kindly Cape Islander old, but still sound, but so lost in the long liner's shadow. Make and break and make do, but the fish are so few that she won't be replaced should she founder. Now it's so hard to not think of before the big war, when the cod went so cheap but so plenty. Foreign trawlers go by now with long seeing eyes, taking all where we seldom take any. And the young folk don't stay with the fishermen's way. Long ago they all moved to the cities, and the ones left behind, old and tired and blind, can't work for a pound, for a penny. In make and break harbor, the boats are so few, too many are pulled up and rotten. Most houses stand empty, old nets hung to dry, are blown away, lost and forgotten. Now I can see the big draggers have stirred up the bay, leaving lobster traps smashed on the bottom. Can they think it don't pay to respect the old ways that make and break men have not forgotten? For we still keep our time to the turn of the tide in this boat that I built with my father. Still lifts to the sky the one longer, and I still talk like old friends on the water. In make and break harbor, the boats are so few, too many are pulled up and rotten. Most houses stand empty, old nets hung to dry, are blown away, lost and forgotten. In make and break harbor, the boats are so few, too many are pulled up and rotten. Most houses stand empty, old nets hung to dry, are blown away, lost and forgotten.
That is beautiful music, Kevin.
Yes, it is.
That guy's got a beautiful voice. It was a terrible situation when we lost that guy.
Yeah, he died in 1983.
Yes, and it was a very freak accident, stuck on a plane that was burning. Very terrible situation. So I've played his songs before, and it doesn't matter which song you listen to. He's just got a way of words. And the way he puts his music and sounds his song to it, it's quite beautiful.
So when I started on this Top 20 project, there were some songs that immediately leapt to mind, such as Leonard Cohen's Suzanne. But in the case of Stan Rogers, I didn't know which song to use. I knew I wanted Stan Rogers, but I had to listen again to find which song to put in.
Right, right, exactly.
This was a choice. There were other close contenders.
Yes, I can imagine. So going back to that playlist that you put together, is that group still together, Kevin?
Yes, really, we call ourselves philosophers more than men's support
right,
group.
Right, right.
And indeed, I've got a meeting this evening. As soon as I leave here, I will be heading in that direction.
That sounds good. So it's kind of a group of guys that you're friends with, and you guys get together and chat about the issues in the world or your own personal issues or whatever, would you say?
Well, we generally choose a topic. The first meeting of the season, we talk about topics. And I make a list of topics, and then during that winter, we meet once a month. During that winter, we go through the various topics as far as we get for that year.
Right, right. Well, that sounds very interesting. That's pretty cool. Yeah, well, I've picked up a couple of things that I have been doing over the winter. One of my friends wanted to bring back his days of playing pool. And we actually had a little pool hall in Smithers back in the day, if you remember the Peak Billiards and Espresso. But we ran that for a little while. We owned it.
Was the building that collapsed?
Yeah, we got in there after the collapse.
Oh.
Yeah, and they rebuilt the building. And then the guy was from Houston, Trent McNabb, a real nice fellow, but he couldn't get his business going again. So we ended up taking it over as a bankrupt business. And we had quite a bit of fun there, but the owner of the building had to leave town, Fred Shortreed. Remember, he was the mayor for a while there? His son, Dave, was quite sick, and so he had to move south for better medical care. So we had to get out at that time. But my friend Floyd is really interested in going back to his days of hanging around the pool hall in Kitimat. And so we go to the Legion on Wednesdays, and they have a little game there called Chase the Joker, and they give you a ticket, and we play pool, and then at 6 o'clock they draw the ticket, and if you get the ticket, then you try to draw out of the deck, and if you get the Joker, you win the money. So it's just kind of a fun thing that's been going on over this winter. But so Kevin, now settling back into your situation in Telkwa now, did you buy a house, or are you renting a house, or are you?
No, I live in a house that my second wife and I bought 22 years ago.
Okay, right on. And then, so you're pretty comfortable there. And I actually, we made the decision a couple of years ago to move to Smithers. And it turned out it was a good decision. Shortly after I had a heart attack, and I had an ambulance at the door in 3 minutes, which would have been a little bit different if I was out on the farm in Telkwa. But Telkwa is a lovely place. Do you have any other hobbies or interests, Kevin? Like, are you a cross-country skier, or do you?
Well, I used to cross-country ski, but I haven't for quite a few years.
Right, right.
I'm old now.
You consider that? Well, I'm older than you, and I'm still cross-country skiing. It's I would use the word mentor, but sort of heroes is Jackrabbit Johansson. He skied till he was 101, and then he quit skiing, and he died at 111. He was an amazing character. And now he would have been probably either a Norwegian or a Swede, so you've got that. You have a bit of that blood, that cross-country ski blood in you. You could bring it back if you were interested. That's for sure.
Well, if I weren't so old.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right, exactly. So, Kevin, we've had a pretty good show here. We've been able to get some information out of you on who you are, what you're doing, and that's sort of the focus of the show. We're trying to introduce the listeners to people in the Valley. And you said you didn't have any sort of heavy-duty statement, but What is your overall feeling about the Bulkley Valley? Like, could you see yourself living somewhere else? Is it time to move to Edmonton, or are you would you consider yourself happy?
Well, I'm very happy here, yes. There is no way I would move now to a city.
Mm-hmm.
Although I might wind up in Smithers, I guess, but we'll see.
Yeah, see what happens.
I was not really planning to come back to the Valley in 1990 when I got out of my second degree at university. But I wound up with a job offer here, so I did come back. And once I was here, I never thought of leaving again, really.
No, exactly. So, Kevin, the other, you know, there seems to be an awful lot of problems in the world. I mean, it's been like that all along, but they seem to be a little bit more exasperated, and we seem to be, you know, having issues. How do you deal with that? Do you feel like a lot of these problems are things that we can't really do a lot about, but we're still having to listen to it on a daily basis? What do you do with all of these issues?
One of my ways of dealing with it is I do not listen to it. I quit listening to the radio quite a number of years ago, and I've never missed it.
Okay, I see.
So I hear occasionally I sit with somebody and wind up listening to their news, and it gets repeated every hour, every day, and it's always bad, and I don't need to worry about it.
No, there's really not a lot that we can do. I mean, we try to look after ourselves, look after our family and our friends, and look after our community, but we're not really going to be having much to do with the bigger issues of the world problems.
No, there's a crazy man down south at this time, but I don't need to hear him every day.
No, definitely not. Well, Kevin, I really appreciate you coming out, and thank you very much for sharing a bit of your life with us. And we're going to bring ourselves to our conclusion now. And I just wanted to remind our listeners that all of our shows are archived, and we are on smithersradio.com. And up on the left-hand corner, we've got the schedule, and we just scroll down to our show, Monday at 6 on the Ropes. And you can play any one of the number of shows that we have to listen to podcasts, listen to the information that we're presenting out there. So I'm going to now close out with my, I have an outro now here that is kind of a pre-recorded, and we'll see if we can get that working.
You have been listening to On the Ropes, Smithers Community Radio, CICK 93.9 on your FM dial. I'm your host, Thomas Tom Roper, and we will see you on the flip side.
Worked.
Let's see if we can shut that down now, Kev.